Nirvana kind of put their money where their mouth was and would regularly play like benefit shows for like different organizations that would help like rape victims or just different causes like that. And I don't think a lot of bands were really doing that back then.
Playing Nirvana.
The Cobain 50.
Nirvana.
Kurt Cobain's top 50 albums.
Nirvana.
From listener powered KEXP.
This is the Cobain 50 from listener powered KEXP. I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry, welcoming you to our third roundtable in the series celebrating women in punk, specifically through the lens of some of the women on Kurt's list of his favorite albums. We're joined today by a couple of our esteemed colleagues, Albina Cabrera from El Quinceañero de Kurt.
Hola amigos, ¿qué tal?
And Janice Headley, who did the excellent, excellent episode on the Raincoats.
Thank you, Martin. Hi there.
And Roddy Nickpour, who did the equally excellent episode on PJ Harvey's Dry.
That is very generous, Martin. Thank you. And nice to be here.
Yeah, so we're talking about women in punk. This sort of aligned with Women's History Month in March. And, you know, kind of kicking off, I kind of almost want to question our own premise a little bit and talk about that. Maybe what are some of the pitfalls of grouping bands together, artists together, people together, based off of something like gender? And I'll own this one. I think I may be the one that ordered the albums this time. But what are the struggles with that and flip side of the coin as well?
I can start with that. It's very hard to answer this because I have a mix of feelings. On one hand, I think that we still need specific moments, specific stories to talk more about the experience of women in music, in any type of work. But we're talking about women in punk, which is something more specific. So I think that, a lot of things changed the last decades, but I think that we need to still tell in the story to keep changing the narrative about women in the history of rock. So it was hard for me because at the same time, yes, this is Women History Month and International Women History Month. So it's very hard to put our experiences and our contributions in one episode. But I think that we need to do it.
I agree with Albina. I know this is something that we've talked about at KEXP in general is these months like Black History Month, Pride Month, like do we continue to have, you know, these sort of like centered, you know, celebrations on air? And, you know, is it tokenizing? And, you know, it is something that I still kind of struggle with and I still sort of question about. But I think ultimately, like Albina was saying, it's a chance just to like elevate these different oppressed groups. So, I mean, that in itself, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah. And speaking to the talks we've had, we in KEXP editorial strive to cover an artist regardless of their racial, gender, ability, identity. Like, we just want to cover good music. And I think we have succeeded in that. And also, you know, we celebrate the diversity of our group by just covering whatever music, regardless of who or where it comes from. And yes, I do think about the idea of these heritage months being limiting because people hit me up all the time for Black History Month type stuff. It is a version of this idea that these women are being lumped together against their will for Women's History Month.
Which is this thing that, as Janice acknowledged, like is something that KEXP embraces fully. And, you know, because that's something we do certainly as a country, I guess, like we acknowledge, like it's Women's History Month, right? Or Black History Month and all these wonderful acknowledgments of, you know, the different, I don't know, artists and people in our world. But Janice also acknowledges this thing about, you know, how do you do that without tokenizing people and pigeonholing them as like, they were only known because they were women. Like, you know, these are the women on Kurt's list. And it's like, Well, there's, you know, so many other women, some of the other bands that we've already talked about and are going to talk about, just because they're not majority women, or whatever. So.
Right. Or even majority women bands like Shonen Knife. We've yet to do our Shonen Knife episode, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah.
And another thing is, I was recently on Instagram. Actually, I can't even give myself the credit. My fiance was recently on Instagram, and she showed me this very funny video of Kathleen Hanna doing something for some media outlet for Women's History Month, but also cheekily pointing out that she doesn't get asked to do things the other 11 months out of the year, which again is something I can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like, you know, something like you're saying, we all talk about this together quite a bit. And if this was the only time of year we were like celebrating women artists, like there's a very big problem there. And at the same time, I guess it's a good chance to reflect and celebrate. And again, these aren't the only women on Kurt's list, which is like, if they were, I would find this very problematic. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I appreciate it's good to have the opportunity to like to celebrate, but this cannot be the only time.
Yeah, I think that also, bueno, just starting with the fact that women have always been in punk, in rock, in mm-hmm. any type of field or work, I just think that this is an opportunity to rethink, revisit the official history of music. I think that it's a good opportunity. Maybe I have a different perspective, me being from Latin America, with some terms about being tokenized, because that is maybe a discussion that we have here in this country for several reasons. And I think that we need that discussion, but at the same time, we can see, and that's why we are doing Canción de Acord, to add a different perspective to that official history of rock. And specifically regarding women, I mean, we have a lot of work to do about it, starting with how are we documenting this? We have a lot of documentaries now and books, but they are not enough. Mm-hmm. We need more and more. So I took this possibility with this series and specifically with this episode to know more. I'm learning more about why something that Barbie Recanati told me. They said the Slits and the Raincoats were the bands that made me think about women in music and women in punk. Why I didn't have t-shirts with the Slits on the Raincoats, but I had tons of t-shirts with the Clash or Sex Pistols. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think that we are conscious about this now, you know, after decades. But I don't know, I'm trying to be positive, and I'm trying to take this as an opportunity to change the narrative about us in music.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I mean, what can you say after that? I mean, well said.
Well, this has been great, guys.
Mic drop, I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, we're mentioning things changing or hopefully changing or wanting to change. And I'm thinking about the eras these artists came out in. So we're talking about the Raincoats, the Slits, and Kleenex in the 70s, and PJ Harvey in the 90s. I'm kind of interested to talk about these two different eras. You know, the 70s was more or less the birth of punk, and the 90s was, you know, grunge or whatever you want to call it. What do you think about these different time periods that these groups existed in, and how it might have impacted their work?
I just think it's worth pointing out the last roundtable was really centered a lot of albums that came out in the 80s. So we talked a lot about Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan as kind of these central figures in world events. It's interesting that the 70s is right before all of that, and the 90s is the immediate aftermath of exactly what we talked about last time.
Everything is a reaction to what came before it. So in the 1970s, there is this kind of a culture of decay, and like how the old ideals of the 50s and 60s, and this specifically as we're talking about the UK and, you know, parts of the United States, about how colonialism is starting to see a little backlash from oppressed people living in these lands. And that led to sort of a structural decay, I think, where these governments are getting a little too big for their britches and stuff is happening, like the blackouts in London and surrounding areas. And I believe that was 1974. And just the idea of so many economic crises happening in the latter half of the 70s, which led to the 80s and this ultra conservatism and the rise of Reagan and Thatcher, and this idea of economic excess and greed, which leads into the 1990s, where we sort of have the rise of neoliberalism, where it's still very capitalist, but also a reaction to ultra conservatism. And I think that in the 90s is where we see the rise of Riot Girl and feminism making a comeback, for lack of a better term. I think the idea of punk artists in the 90s, like Kurt, like PJ Harvey, stepping up against the idea of neoliberalism, where it's like everyone is pretending things are okay and pretending that we're all together, but underneath the surface, sexism still exists, racism still exists, ableism is in full swing.
And xenophobia, my friend.
Yes.
And a lot of xenophobia. Mm-hmm. Because
absolutely,
if we are thinking about the different layers, we are going to find more and more. And I think that based on what you're saying, I've been thinking about that double standards, right? Because we are talking about The Clash and Sex Pistols being the ones who broke the rules and became this like new wave of punk, and at the same time, there were a lot of women doing the same thing at the same time. And if we think about, let's go to this country, let's say Alice Bag, she started playing in 1977.
Yeah.
So she didn't start in the 90s. But who is talking about her? We started to talk about her in the 90s or after the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm discovering a lot of those like double standards that also the official history of rock told us about our contributions. I don't know. What do you think, Janice?
I love how the Linda Lindas have been using their recent fame to elevate Alice Bag. Like that's very curt, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I guess I wanted to mention, like, when I interviewed Gina Birch of the Raincoats last year, she told me about how, you know, in London in the late 70s, feminism was considered a dirty word. And to declare yourself a feminist, like, was, you know, kind of shocking, or, you know, it was not a good thing to do, basically. And she told me, as a member of the Raincoats on stage, she might have risked having someone throw something at her. Bikini Kill probably risked getting beaten up. And then Pussy Riot risked, you know, going to prison, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you were saying, Martin, it's like, you know, I'd like to think that things have changed through these generations, through like late 70s punk, through 90s Riot Girl. But then, you know, yeah, I kind of look at how things are today, and absolutely, like, there's still the sexism, there's still the racism.
Well, I was just going to add to that and offer the old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm,
I mean,
right.
Even in the 2020s, you know, we're still dealing with a sexist, racist, xenophobic society. Look at all of the legislation that is still being placed around abortion.
Absolutely.
I mean, Roe versus Wade being overturned after decades. Like,
yeah,
we're still living through the same shit.
And there's so much more. I mean, trans rights, too. Like, you know, gay rights,
absolutely,
trans rights, all these things that are, you know, social issues, quote unquote, progressive. Like, as much as we, I feel like I've been led to believe we live in this utopian, like, you know, growing up, right? Like this image of like, oh, Martin Luther King Jr. came and solved everything in 1960, whatever. And then it was like, you live in a perfect world. And then you grow up and it's like, oh, it was never perfect. It was just this tailored image of what, you know, powerful people wanted me to believe so that I didn't speak up against it and mm-hmm. cause a riot. Right. And that leads to, you know, Riot Girl and all that stuff and just punk ethos and, you know, just growing up out of that naivety, at least for me, and realizing like, you know, you gotta speak up. And, you know, I think about like Kurt, because Janice, you mentioned how like some of these punk women would like use, say they're feminists and face a lot of discrimination, a lot of backlash, danger even. And I feel like, you know, not that Kurt never faced any discrepancies, but for Kurt to wear a dress on stage or like play a really bad show for an audience that was being like harassing women and still be a really popular band. I mean, that's male privilege too in feminism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I think when the 90s presented itself as a much more progressive time and, you know, I guess hindsight, again, it's always 2020. The way the slits were positioned as like, oh, the Clash's girlfriends or like all these bands were in the shadow of like their quote unquote male counterparts. And I think about Courtney Love, you know, and lived through this at record and that came out, fantastic album. And then all these rumors like, oh, Kurt probably wrote all these songs, like Courtney probably killed Kurt. Like it's these crazy like things that like, there's always a reason to dismiss these women artists. I think about, we were talking about Beyonce earlier getting dismissed for like having other songwriters on her songs. And it's just interesting, like that it perpetuates, and 20, 30 years from now, we're going to look back at 2024 and be like, wow, what progressive times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're still having those situations, that type of comments. I don't know. I'm not Courtney Love, but I'm also getting those comments like, we're all the time demonstrating the double. We need to demonstrate the double every day, no matter what. I don't know your experience, Janice, but I think that back to that idea that, of course, the things change it a little bit, but many of these things that we are talking about are still happening today in 2024. That's why I think that we have to still having those spaces, these type of moments to talk more, to think together about this. That's why I'm very happy that I also have this conversation with you, Martin, with you, Dusty, with you, Brody, you know, to incorporate and to educate ourselves. I think that is the only way.
Again, yeah. You just say things so perfectly. What yeah. am I supposed to add?
Stop. I'm not saying anything. I mean, I'm just saying
just
seedy
constantly
things.
Crushing it. You know, one thing we've mentioned a bit here is, you know, artists like Janice, you mentioned the Linda's lifting up artists. And I think about Olivia Rodrigo doing similar things and passing out contraceptives at her shows and things like that. And it makes me think about the Riot Girl movement in the 90s and building a scene around women supporting women. And obviously that had a huge impact on Kurt. Like, we talk a lot about Kurt being a feminist, but where did that come from? It came from these artists. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm curious to hear from you all, your thoughts on Riot Girl and influence on punk and Kurt.
I think it's important to emphasize the fact that Kurt didn't come out of the womb and say, I'm a feminist. Like, he had to learn that.
And he had to unlearn stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. He had to unlearn his male privilege for sure.
I think that living in Olympia during that time and dating Toby Vail, the drummer for Bikini Kill, I think was a huge influence. I mean, not only on his music taste, you know, it's not proven, but, you know, it's very strongly hinted that, you know, he discovered the Raincoats through Toby. But also, you know, I'm sure it affected his politics. The Riot Girl scene was, you know, rising, and, you know, there were zines and there were the concerts, you know, there was a lot of like rhetoric being said from the stage. And I'm sure that, you know, really made him stop and think and influence the way that he saw the world.
Yeah, absolutely. There were meetings. There were Riot Girl charters. I'm not sure if Kurt was privy to any of those conversations, but just being in the same community where this entire feminist movement started had to have been galvanizing for him. I mean, it has to be inspiring. I was definitely inspired by it. I would say Riot Girl radicalized me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And made me investigate my place as a black man in America and, you know, the history of the oppression of my people. Like, I got that from learning about feminism through Riot Girl.
Yeah. During the process of producing this episode, specifically this one, I was trying to imagine Kurt Cobain starting to understand his privilege as a white man, you know, once he started to be influenced by all these amazing radical activists, because he changed the rules because he was a white man on the stage, leader of one of the most successful bands in the world.
Of all time.
Of all times, stopping a show or trying to support women that were harassed or trying to stop different situations and trying to support us or being feminist. I think that a lot of men are starting to think about it because they saw white man mm-hmm. on the stage saying, hey, maybe you have to act different about it. So I was thinking about that role of Kurt understanding. I don't know. Maybe he didn't think about it, but I think he did. Because, I mean, Kathleen Hanna, Bikini Kill, all the Riot Girl movement, they had been doing this since forever. But we're talking about it, and specifically internationally, we're talking about this because Kurt Cobain started the conversation on the stage. At least if we're talking about Latin America, and we're going to talk about one specific story that happened in my home country, Argentina, with Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, and the Calamity Jane. But I don't know. I've been thinking about it, about how he was conscious about this, his privilege on this.
And I just love that he didn't make it ambiguous at all. Like, Dusty mentioned the liner notes, and I forget which album, but he says, if you're a bigot, like, I hate you. Like, you know, like he just, because it's so easy for a band to like try to play both sides, right? Like, I want to appeal to really cool, gruff men, but also like, you know, sensible people who are, you know, feminists, right? And it's like, he didn't try to play both sides. He was like, if you hate women, then I hate you. And I just love how, you know, he was not afraid to be radical, to your point, Albina. I think that's really great.
And I also thought it was great that Nirvana kind of put their money where their mouth was and would regularly play like benefit shows for like different organizations that would, you know, help like rape victims or, you know, just different causes like that. And, you know, I don't think a lot of bands were really doing that back then.
I think it gives me hope that, like, because I think that it's so easy to make this false equivalency of like, if you have a lot of fame and power and money, you have to like cave to like mainstream ideals that go against oppressed people. But I mean, I love, to your point, Janice, like how cool that Nirvana subverted that idea. It was just like, we're going to use our power to uplift these groups otherwise. Like, and we, you know, if we don't care if that ends up tearing us down, but it never would because people respected them too much, you know? And I guess like, I mentioned that because it gives me a lot of hope for the future, right? It's like, if Nirvana could do that in the 90s, I have to believe that the more bands that use their privilege of fame to do that, then there's a lot of hope for all these issues we were talking about that have persisted for, again, I'm thinking queer people and, you know, women with abortions and all these things that we talked about.
Yeah, that was something that really struck with me with Kurt when getting into his music and his politics and, you know, being a white guy listening to rock music, there's a lot of just blatant misogyny. And mm-hmm. especially if you look at what came right before, like Motley Crue, Girls, 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 Paradise City, Guns N' Roses, it's all so steeped in this. And like, Kurt was really acutely aware of his privilege and the opportunities he was getting and his platform. And nowadays everyone kind of has their own platform. You have social media and you can say anything and it's easy to demonstrate your values and not live it. But he was right, demonstrating and living, especially if I'm thinking about myself being a teenager when you're so impressionable. If you fall down the wrong path, the wrong role model, like you can really go down a dark path. And I'm constantly like thankful for Kurt, thankful for my mom. I feel like I'm always shouting my mom on this podcast.
Hell yeah.
She showed me a lot of great.
I love that.
Yeah, she showed me a lot of great women.
I love artists. Your mom. Your mom's wonderful.
She's great. Shout out to moms. But yeah, I don't know. It's amazing that Kurt was able to, however acutely aware if he was about being a role model or not, like maybe he didn't care. He just was like, this is who I am and you're going to hear it. But I think that was vastly important and vastly influential.
Yeah. I think a lot about the idea of being a male feminist, and I go kind of back and forth on it because I feel as though a lot of the time I feel like because I am a man, I am underqualified to be a feminist. But then I see a role model like Kurt, who is a white man, but is a feminist and using, or while he was alive, he used his power and influence and popularity to elevate feminist values. And I think in some way, feminism doesn't need men, but it is good to have men upholding the values of feminism because, for better or worse, men are influenced by other men, or at least some men are. And I think that if you have that person who is really explaining the values of feminism, really living his life according to feminism, then there are young men out there who don't have that sort of grounding, who will look up to this guy who they think is really cool and say, oh, like this, let me check into this. Let me see what's going on, and hopefully, you know, make feminists out of them.
Mm, yeah. Sometimes, yes, I have a mix of feelings about it because I think that Ben needs to be more in conversations between each other to try to educate themselves, right, you know. Yeah. But at the same time, I think, like, I wish that they can be influenced by us. I wish that just our perspective can open them a new way to think. So it's a kind of mix of feelings. So this episode made me think a lot about it. Kurt was very smart navigating that zone.
Yeah, and I think the same way as you, because historically I have been inspired by women, raised by women, and looking to women for not only guidance on how to move through the world, but looking to women for creative guidance or creative inspiration. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like we've only cracked the surface of the brilliant art that women have brought into this world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was thinking that maybe I have something very different. I grew up thinking that I have to assimilate more into the male world to be part of rock, you know, or I grew up thinking that, I don't know if punk made by the women is the same, you know, and I can see the new generation of teenagers right now thinking exactly the opposite, you know, saying like, you know what, we're here and we're not going anywhere. And that is a conversation that also had with Barbie and with several women in this episode about that. Bueno, Barbie Recanati telling me, like, I grew up with all t-shirts of male musicians, you know, and I didn't even think about women in rock. And now the things are different. So, yeah.
I feel like true punk comes from women. Because, mm-hmm. you know, for white men, singing about how they're oppressed, it's like, well, real oppression? I mean, let's talk to minorities, let's talk to women, let's talk to, you know, trans. Let's obviously, you know, it's like hearing it from four white men, it's like, well, I don't know.
Well, yeah, switching gears and winding down. I mean, I'm going to say this as a personal opinion. If your band is full of dudes, I'm less likely to check you out. So let's talk about women who are making great punk music today. I'm going to open the floor. Let's talk about not only bands who are inspired by the Slits, the Raincoats, Kleenex, PJ Harvey, but let's talk about women who are creating dynamic punk music today.
I mean, as the person who wrote the tribute to PJ Harvey, I do want to shout out PJ Harvey real quick, because she's very much still like actively making music. She has like 10 albums under her belt and has done so many collaborations, and you know, she's got her own style, but she's also sharing it with other people, and I think that's really cool. And to the extent that, you know, she almost sang with Nirvana, and like our fingers are crossed that someday she'll share a stage with Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic. But anyway, so PJ Harvey. But bands, you know, all over the place, and just three who come to mind are like a local band in Seattle, Lane Lines. But then also I love some of these bands that like are shining in these otherwise male dominated genres, like post rock and metal. So Sarita Adelia and Luminette are just two who come to mind for me. If we're doing shout outs, that's what I would say.
If we're talking about like bands inspired by the artists that we covered, personally, I love how the band Horse Girl do their own interpretation of like the overlapping vocal style that the Raincoats did. And there's another band that I loved who've since broken up. They were called Grass Widow. And yes, I saw them on tour with the Raincoats. They played at Chop Suey in Seattle. And during the encore, both bands got up on stage and covered the Kinks' Lola at like on the Raincoats' debut album.
I think that the new generation of women in punk, I can mention, of course, Barbie Recanati in Argentina, Marina Bertoldi in Argentina, Doom Chica in Argentina as well. Right now, we're having like a very strong post-punk scene in South America, which is great. Gaby de los Santos, Dominican Republic, Vondré in Mexico, Margaritas Podridas, Muñeca here in Seattle, Emmy Pop here in Seattle as well. Emmy is from Puerto Rico. That is also an island that has a huge garage rock and punk rock scene. Mm-hmm. And I would like to also mention, this is from the 80s in Mexico, but it was a like super strong band, Virginia Sacudida, led by Patricia Moreno, alias La Zapa, Fertil Miseria in Colombia, Maria Teta with Maria Teta y el Empujón Brutal, and also the founder of Concha Acústica from Peru, like legends, total legends there. But yes, I have to say that we have a live on KEXP session with Margaritas Podridas from Hermosillo, Sonora. And I think that they are a huge example about this new generation of women in punk.
I mean, I just brought up my Bandcamp app and I can tell y'all a bunch of women-led bands that I have been absolutely obsessed with lately. There's a punk band from Sydney, Australia called Itchy and the Knits. Their debut album is like maybe 13, 14 minutes. I listened to it literally three times in a row when I was in the shower.
A 13-minute album is punk as fuck, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, there's nothing more punk than a 13-minute album. Also, there's so many bands. Okay. I'm looking at the Long Hots, this really grimy Velvet Underground inspired band featuring Rosalie, who just put out a really great album on Merge Records, by the way. Collet from Portland, Love and Hell from Portland, Whisper Hiss also from Portland. So many great bands, particularly from Portland right now, doing their thing. Also got a shout out Debt Rag, who has Lily from Grass Widow in their band. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Olympia bands right now. I could do this for hours. XV from Detroit. Such a great band. I'm going to leave it right there. Judy and the Jerks. Come on. I could
do this all day.
There's a reason Martin puts out KXP's local Pacific Northwest newsletter. Shouts out to you, right. Martin.
I mean, yeah, local. I always think about the trilogy of bands together, the Chastity Belt, Who Is She, Childbirth, different configurations of Julia Shapiro, constantly inspiring to me. I feel like I see a clear through line with like the Slits and the Raincoats to their mm-hmm. music and the way they use humor, but also so introspective. It's just really wonderful. The new Mannequin Pussy record is crazy. If you haven't listened to that yet, I Got Heaven, some crazy lines in there. It's amazing. And the shout out to like Kim Gordon, her new record is insane, and just some obviously not that. A new artist,
yeah.
But 70 years old, still putting out daring wow. music,
putting out trap beats,
yeah, rocking the trap beats. Yeah.
And I mentioned her earlier, but I want to talk about Olivia Rodrigo again, really quick, like, and just to be like open, like I feel like when she first came out, I was. Maybe it's like internalized misogyny, just sitting there like, oh, this is just kiddie music or whatever. And then you think about the platform and all these women who've gathered around her, like Kathleen Hanna and the Breeders who are supporting her, and just really inspiring to me. And when I really started listening to it, I was like, how is this different from like a Jeff Rosenstock record? Like, what's my f***ing deal? Like, get over it, bro.
I just want to appreciate that you acknowledge that, Dusty, because like, I mean, I am unlearning stuff all the time, like that instinct, you know. I don't, you know, I think neither of us is a misogynist, but I appreciate their vulnerability to acknowledge that, because I mean, sometimes I feel that and I have to check myself. I'm like, no, this is amazing. Like, why is this different from all the amazing things I already like? So just want to acknowledge your acknowledging yourself.
Yeah, I think that also men build that narrative around pop.
Yes.
You know, like pop is for women, you right. know, and also if you're a music journalist, oh, but you're a woman, so you can write about pop, right? Right. And it, because you have that sensibility, right? And I was like, but I mean, yes, I love pop, but I want to write about rock, you yeah. know? And I also grew up with that idea around pop, you know? And I have the same situation with Taylor Swift. I have the same situation with Olivia Rodrigo and more. So I'm also trying to relearn that and trying to break that narrative.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And not to go full as the father of a daughter, but it's really special to listen to these little, like she's like two, but like she knows these songs and she'll sing like strawberry ice cream. And it's just like thinking that she's going to grow up with heroes like this, that like that's going to be like in an ideal world, you know, maybe the 90s thought it was going to be more like this now, but it's going to be the norm for her, and to see like a Filipina rock star and who's speaking out like and giving access to Plan B at her shows, like that's so rad. And it like as much as like these can be very pessimistic times, and there's so much to be overwhelmed about and pessimistic about, little wins like that feel really special, and I'm thankful for artists who are using their platform like that.
Yeah,
that's punk.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably like a topic for a whole different episode, but yeah, I was thinking about your daughter and just yeah, exactly representation. That was something that was really lacking in the 90s. And I'm so excited to see, you know, more diversity in music, or at least, you know, there was diversity in music before, but more elevated diversity in music, you know, nowadays.
We don't have to wait for bands to be broken up before we discover how awesome they are as much.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Like a woman that changed my life completely, that has almost the same age than me, it was Barbie Recanati again, like Barbie te amo. But Barbie, she told me once something about the narrative around groupies, you know, being a groupie like decades ago. And she was telling me, they say, I found out that... I wasn't super fan of a man on the stage because I want to them is that they put that idea in our minds. I just wanted to be a guitarist like them. Mm-hmm. I really want that. But I didn't see that. I didn't see that representation when I was growing up. Groupies, I love you, chicas, but I think that is also, you know, part of that misoginia around our roles in the music industry, the role that you have to play if you go to a show, you know, and I think that representation matters, of course, always. But I think that the new generations are growing up in a better conditions because they are seeing so many badass woman right. on the stage, you know, and they can see that they have a possibility that they can be those women.
Yeah. I mean, the Raincoats wouldn't have existed if not for the Slits, because the founders like went to a Slits concert and were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was possible. So it's definitely impactful.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. I've got one question to wrap this up with, and that is, how are these artists, PJ Harvey, the Raincoats, the Slits, Kleenex, how have they reshaped what punk can be and sound like?
I guess going backwards in time, I'll start with PJ Harvey. And I guess just, she started grunge with Kurt. Like, you know, I think that's one of the coolest things about PJ Harvey, because I think it's easy for PJ Harvey to be a name that everyone recognizes. Just because, again, she's got such a legacy that's gone more than 30 years now. But I think it's important to acknowledge her role in the grunge sound, you know, the guitar sound. And it seems like a bad word. I shouldn't be saying grunge because no one likes that word anymore. But like, but that, you know, that signature sound of just, you know, what 90s grunge sounded like. But also combining it with like this sultry, like vulnerable songwriting that was unique. And I feel like that's a style that PJ has set off, and she's gone on to do a lot gentler music since those days, since Dry came out in 92, but she's got that tremendous range. And I think that she put a lot of poetic like vulnerability into punk.
And with such a strong personality at the same time.
Oh yeah.
You know, because I think that PJ Harvey was huge. Of course, when we were in the 90s, the world was ready for someone like PJ Harvey, mm-hmm. I think, because she was also a consequence of all these like generation of women who paved the way. But I think that PJ Harvey also opened the door for opportunities, not only in rock, punk, or grunge. I remember Mon Laferte telling me like PJ Harvey was one of the biggest influences, and also for ska, folk, rock, pop. I think that PJ Harvey had that confidence on the stage and the strong personality, and at the same time, that vulnerability to tell you different perspectives about love or power. And at the same time, being someone that is not like a kind of modelo hegemónica, you know, like on the stage, that she was like someone like any of us, you know, and I think that representation also changed a lot of women's mind.
I think in the context of Kleenex and the Raincoats, two bands who were very like-minded and toured together, it's the idea that you can be an art punk band and not be serious. You can do whatever you want to do. I mean, each of those bands had pretty serious subject matter, but at the same time, it wasn't necessarily a stodgy sort of gallery sort of thing where you know, are deep in thought and it's so high concept and you have to have this bounty of intellect to even engage with it. They're making music for you to dance to. I mean, it's weird. It's, you know, off the wall a little bit. It's the kind of music you first listen to and you're like, what the f***? But then you really get into it and it burrows into you and provokes a physical reaction in addition to opening your mind a little bit. and like realizing that, oh, there are endless possibilities in the punk format. And I think bands that are inspired by these groups, the Raincoats and Kleenex, are usually on the weirder end of the punk spectrum because they realize that the world is their oyster, that they can do anything they want. And I think that is a fundamental quality of punk rock.
Yeah, I touch on this in my episode, but Gina from the Raincoats, you know, mentioned that, you know, they weren't striving for perfection. They were striving for creativity. And I think that definitely expresses itself in their music. I mean, it's so unique. I think it was a completely different definition of punk than what we had heard punk to be at that time. You know, they had this like erratic, classically trained violinist, but, you know, still sort of like with erratic like timing and the way that they used it in their music. And then, of course, you know, their own musician, you know, the different musicianship in that band. But I think that was very inspiring, obviously, to a lot of, you know, the 90s Riot Girl bands, just knowing like, you know, I don't have to be like a classically trained guitarist or something like that. Like if I have this passion, I can pick up the instrument and I can express it.
I think that's a great point to end on. Thank you everyone for this amazing conversation. It's been super inspiring. Well, thank you to Janice Headley, and thank you to Albina Cabrera. Go listen to El Cancionero de Kurt or watch it on YouTube. Shout out to Roddy for engineering and audio production. Isabel Khalili is our podcast manager. Larry Mizell Jr. is our editorial director. I'm Dusty Henry.
And I'm Martin Douglas. This is the Cobain 50 from Listener Powered KEXP, where the music matters. Albina, I just tripped right over Albina's name. Albina Cabrera, host of... And joining us are our esteemed colleagues, starting with Albina Cabrera, host of El Cancionero de Kurt. I almost got that in one try.
Hi, amigos. How are you? So happy to be here again with you. Bye, la puta.